Hey everyone, welcome back to Huron County Author Talk, a podcast where we talk to many talented local authors about a variety of topics within the world of writing. I'm your host, Hamilton Baker of the Huron County Library, and I'm excited to bring you another episode in Season 2. If you're a writer, a reader, or someone who likes to hear authors talk about their craft, how they publish their books, different marketing strategies they employ, and much more, then this show is for you. In this episode, I sat down with guest Joanne Levy, one of Huron County's local authors. In our interview, Joanne talks about her award-winning middle grade book, Sorry for Your Loss. She also tells me what it took for her to become a published author, which involved writing 13 books before her first one was published, as well as stacking up over 1,000 rejections over several years. We also discuss the benefits of being part of a supportive and collaborative writing community, the importance of receiving feedback from others, and much more. How long have you been writing, and what kind of books do you write?
So I have been writing, well, I wrote as a kid, but I've been writing seriously for publication probably since about 2008, 2009. And I started out writing books for adults, and then I moved into writing books for teens, YA. But it wasn't until I started writing middle grade that I got published. So all of my books that are published to date are middle grade books.
Okay. And we're into, well, it's, I guess, late summer or early fall. In terms of the writing world, what are you focused on these days?
Well, middle grade again. Do you mean which specific books I'm looking at, or?
Kind of like, are you writing these days? Are you marketing? Are you publishing a new book? Like, where are you on that kind of scale?
Yeah, once you've got a book or two out, it's all of the above. So I'm always either drafting a book or editing a book or promoting a book, often all at once. Right now, I'm not actively drafting, but I am outlining what I'm hoping will be like a 2026 book. And actually I just submitted for some grants, because there are grants available for writers through Ontario Arts Council and Canada Council for the Arts. So that sorts of lights a fire under writers' butts to get them going on thinking about upcoming books. So there's that. And I've also got my next book is actually coming out in March. So it's a bit of a ways away, but I'm starting to think about marketing that one. And that one's called Bird Brain. And it's another middle grade for kids, 8 to 12. It's fun and a STEM component about a girl and her parrot. So I'm starting to look at marketing that. And soon I will probably get edits for my 2025 book. And that's coming out, I think it's fall 2025 from Orca. And then I've got another book that I've just sold that is a secret and I can't talk about it yet, but that'll probably be 2024. So lots on the go.
Yeah. How many books do you write in a year typically?
That's a weird question to answer, because some books take several years, some books take weeks. It really depends on the book and the year. So I can't give you a straighter answer on that. Mm-hmm. Terrible answer I can give you is it takes as long as it takes, and I write as many books as I need to in a year.
Right. Well, when it varies that much, then that's the answer basically.
Yeah. I mean, the book that's coming out in 2025, I call it my pandemic baby, because it was, I started it and put it down and picked it up and put it down. And, you know, all the creative stress that we were all under made it really hard for me to write. So it took over 3 years to write that book from start to finish. So yeah, I mean, it just, and I've written another book. It took 3.5 weeks. So it really depends on the book. Yeah, right. For sure.
Yeah. Interesting that, yeah, it's such a variation, but yeah. How many books have you published at this point, as of today?
As of today, I have to look at my thing. I think 7 under my name, and then I did 2 under a pen name that was like a write for hire project for Simon & Schuster. So 9 total.
Okay. And it sounds like you have, was it 3 or 4 in the pipeline?
Three right now, and then 1 more that I've just started outlining.
Right. Okay. And yeah, your most recent one is Still Sorry for Your Loss, right? That's the most recent publication?
Actually, the most recent is The Book of Elsie, which came out in the fall. But the one before that was Sorry for Your Loss. And Sorry for Your Loss is the one that's getting more attention. It won an award and finaled for a few others. It was a finalist for the Governor General's Award, which I think is a pretty big deal in Canada. The Book of Elsie that's come out since is for reluctant readers. It's a high-low book, so it doesn't get as much attention on, and it doesn't really get in bookstore on bookstore shelves because it is for a specific school and library audience. But that's my most recent one.
Okay. And that's what you were talking about, the Governor General. So, like, Sorry for Your Loss, since it gets more, a lot, has gotten quite a bit of attention, I thought we could delve into that a little bit. Sure. So it was published in 2021, and it's either won or been nominated for several awards, including the 2022 Governor General's Literary Awards and the Forest of Reading. Can you tell us a bit about writing that book and your experience since the nominations, since they started coming out and since then?
Sure. So it's, as you may have figured out from the title, Sorry for Your Loss, it's about grief and loss. And it's actually set in a funeral home inspired by the one that my dad manages in Hamilton. And I wanted to sort of pull back the curtain on funeral homes and what happens at funerals for kids. There's a lot of books for kids about dealing with grief and losing somebody close to them, but there's not a lot of books about funerals and what actually happens to our bodies when we die and where we go and things like that. So being able to honor my dad and the important work that he does was a secondary benefit of writing that book. So I had a lot of reasons for writing it. And another big one was when I lost my mom in 2013, and we were given the behind the scenes tour of the funeral home, having to deal with that. And we were in the room marked private that most people don't get to see, but because my dad manages the funeral home, we were back there. And I remember feeling comforted by knowing what was going to happen to my mom, you know, between the time when she died and the time when we had her funeral. So that was one of the big reasons why I wanted to pull back the curtain on what happens in funeral homes. So that was my experience writing it. And that's what really sparked the idea. And of course, I did more tours after that to do my own research and everything in the book that I tried to be as true to fact as I possibly could without scaring kids. And I tried to do it in a gentle way. So that was my experience writing it. And, you know, as you mentioned, it came out in 2021, and it was a year to the day before it got its first award nomination, and that was the Governor General's Award. So it felt like sort of a quiet book to come out. And then a year later, it started to get lots of attention. And it also won the Canadian Jewish Literary Award for its age group. And as you said, it was in the Forest of Reading, which is the Ontario Library Association's Kids Choice Reading program, which I love Kids Choice Reading programs because the kids get to vote on which books win. And it's actually been in a few other provincial Kids Choice programs as well, which is great. So it's really been an amazing thing. And getting into those lists for the Kids Choice Reading Awards means that more kids read the book, which is just the best thing. And that's exactly what I want from my books, is for it to get into kids' hands. So yeah, it's been a really great experience for sure.
Nice. And did you get any, did you have lots of I guess, media attention or interviews or anything along those lines when the nominations came in, or did it even fly you out somewhere? You know what I mean? Like, was there anything like that as far as the book coming out or getting nominated?
Yeah, I think that for the Governor General's Awards, it is a big media push. I think for the kids categories, it's not as much. It doesn't get as much media notice. But I did get the local papers, the Goddard Signal Star and the Clinton paper, did do an interview with me, which was really great. And just more stuff in sort of kid-lit communities about the book and things like that, and within libraries and things like that. So just really local media was mm-hmm. really good.
Good. Nice. So who is your favorite character in the book and why?
So the book follows Evie is the daughter of the owners of the funeral home, and she meets a boy named Oren who has gone through the trauma of losing both of his parents. So I mean, I love them both. I love them both together, I think is probably the best answer. Evie is very talkative and she's very chatty and she gets ahead of herself and she says not the smartest things or the most sensitive things without realizing it. So she was a lot of fun to write. And Oren actually, after the trauma of losing his parents, has selective mutism. So he doesn't speak at all. So the two of them together were that dichotomy of speaking too much and not speaking at all. So I can't say either were my favorite, but I really love both of them together.
If you came across someone in the street and you could only tell them one thing about the book, what would you tell them?
That it's set in a funeral home like the one my dad manages. That's my quick elevator pitch.
Right. Nice. Okay, so we'll switch gears a little bit and talk more broadly than just the book. Tell us about your publishing and marketing experience. Have you ever self-published?
So I did. So my first book called Small Medium at Large was out with Bloomsbury in 2012, and it went out of print a few years later. So I actually self-published it a few years ago, and then I self-published also the sequel to it called Small Medium Takes Charge. Most publishers will not take a sequel to a book once it's out of print. So I knew, even though I'd written the sequel and Bloomsbury wasn't interested in it at the time, that nobody would pick it up. So I thought, oh, I'm going to commission new covers. And I got a local Canadian artist to do the covers for both of the books together. And I put them out on my own.
So yeah, so you've done both then, because you're traditionally published through Orca now, right? And how have you felt, or how have you found the difference between self-published and traditionally published?
Sure. So my day job as it is I'm actually an author assistant. So I do admin work for other authors. So I'm very familiar with the self-publishing arena. I do have some traditionally published clients and also some self-published clients. So I've sort of straddled both worlds for a long time. So for me to be able to self-publish my out of print book seemed like a natural progression, because I didn't like the idea of a book going out of print and not having it out there. So it was an easy thing for me to do, because I do it pretty much every day for other people anyway. For a middle grade book, the problem is the access and people finding the book and people buying the book. So as it is, I mean, the books do not sell well. They're not on bookstore shelves. And I knew that going in that was going to happen. I also did a audiobook of the first book. And that sells reasonably well. But it's a different kind of market. I mean, for middle grade readers, if you're not getting into libraries and bookstores, it's hard for kids to find the books. But I knew that going in, so I'm satisfied just knowing that they're out there. Marketing self-published books is difficult as well, because you're not going into bookstores and seeing your book on the shelves. So it is different. I mean, self-publishing for genre writers, fantasy, romance, it's a much more sustainable and it's easier to find readers that way on the different ebook platforms as well. So like anything else, it's what your expectations are of the industry and what you want to do with your books. But I'm not unsatisfied with the process. I mean, if I'd had my druthers, I would have preferred that the book stay in print and then they take the sequel, and it would have sold better. But a lot of the traditional publishing is outside of author's control once you sign a contract.
And since you've worked, like you say, you've straddled both worlds for a long time, would you say you have a preference between like traditionally publishers easier to work with or whatever, or self-publishers easier, or it's probably a nuanced answer, I would think.
Yeah, they both absolutely have their pros and cons. I think the baseline is what you want from your book. So for self-published people, you have 100% of the control over what happens to your book. But at the same time, you have 100% of the responsibility for putting it out. So if you're not a formatter, you're going to be farming that out. If you're not a cover designer, you're going to be farming that out. If you're not a good marketer, it's going to be an uphill battle. I mean, marketing any book traditionally published or self-published is always going to be an uphill battle. But if you have a team at a publisher behind you, it can be a little easier. Also, especially for kids' books, being self-published at this point means you're not eligible for prizes. A lot of libraries, and maybe you can speak to this more, won't stock your books if you're self-published, or it's harder to get into libraries. It's a lot tougher to get into bookstores, other than some that will do a consignment, which is great, but it just means that you're doing all that footwork. So it is tough to answer. Neither is better. It's what's better for you. So for me, for kids' books, because there is that issue of access and kids finding books and promoting sort of to the gatekeepers, the teachers, the librarians, the awards, for me at least, traditionally publishing is a much better route.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm sure it makes sense for, or it varies depending on the author and depending on the genre and all that sort of thing, right?
Sure. And some people, even with kids' books or picture books, they just want to do a bunch to give out to their family, and that makes sense for them to self-publish it that way, or they just want to see it in print. Or they have a platform where maybe it's a nonfiction book and they're a scientist or something like that, where it makes sense, where it's such a niche market that it would be difficult to traditionally publish. There's so many variables that it's impossible to say what's a perfect solution. It's very individual.
Yeah, definitely. Print books, audiobooks, movies, video games, music, and much more from the Huron County Library. Leading up to launch day for whatever book it is that's coming out, what are all the things you do to market a book that's coming out?
Everything. There's always so much to do. I mean, there's always so much more you feel like you can be doing, but it's hard to, this many books in, I've sort of learned what's worth doing, what's not worth doing. But each book is kind of different too. So, having your baseline of a website, a social media presence, going out and meeting with booksellers as much as you can and networking with other authors is always a good thing to do. It really depends on the genre too. Again, for kids books, it's a different marketing beast than marketing to adults. Social media can help. There's just all sorts of things you can do, but it's hard to know what moves the needle too. So it's easy to get overwhelmed and find that your efforts may not work. So I try to be really precious about my time and make sure that either it's A, something I love doing, or B, actually going to work to market the book. Mm-hmm. So that's probably not the most succinct answer, but it's throwing spaghetti at the wall a lot of times too.
Right. Is there any, I guess, is there like one or two staples that it's like every book I do this every time? Like this is just something that works and I know it works.
Yeah, I try to get on social media as much as I can without spamming people in a big way. Try to make it meaningful and not just promote. One thing that I have found for my kids' books that's helpful is I always make up bookmarks, and I always make sure I can sign my bookmarks, and I'll send them out to teachers and librarians if they want them. I'll send them class sets. That's something I enjoy doing, even though it breaks the bank, because postage in Canada is very expensive and going to the States is very expensive. But I like being able to put a bookmark in a kid's hand. And even if they don't buy my book, even if they never read my book, at least they have something that came from me. So maybe that's not so much a marketing thing as much as, me doing as much as I can to foster a love of reading in kids. But that's something I always do. Like by my feet here, you can't see it, but I have a case of bookmarks. Like I have tons of bookmarks.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So if you want any for your library, let me know.
Right. All right. How many books did you write before you published your first?
That is a great question. I think the answer is 13. I think Small, Medium, at Large was my 14th book.
Really? Were they all middle grade, or they were different genres?
No, actually. So I started out writing for adults. And then I went to writing YA. So Small, Medium, at Large originally was a YA. So for teens. And it went on submission, and an editor said she liked it, but she thought it would work better as a middle grade. So I rewrote it as a middle grade, and then she didn't buy it. But then we went on to sell it down the road. My agent sold it to Bloomsbury. Okay. So that's the very short version of a very long road to publication. It was, a lot of years. Yeah.
Because, sounds like a lot of those 13 books were like full-length novels, or were they?
Oh, yeah. Full-length novels.
Yeah. That's a lot.
Yeah.
How fast were you writing those books? Do you remember?
No. I'm trying to remember. I'm so bad with dates. I started writing for something to do when I had a job where I had a lot of time on my hands. I was working at an employment center and waiting for clients to come in. And I had a lot of time. I'm trying to remember when that was. That was probably early 2000s. And then I just enjoyed it and did it part-time, something to do. And it wasn't until a few years later that I started even thinking about publication. Right. Yeah.
Okay. And your first book, when did it come out? What year?
2012.
So you were writing for a good, at least like novels, it sounds like 10 years or so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I said at the beginning that I'd been writing for publication since 2009, which is kind of not true. I think I got my agent in about 2009. So, but I was writing before then and trying to get an agent, and that didn't go so well for a few years. So yeah, it was a long road for sure. I mean, I stacked up over 1,000 rejections before I got my first publishing contract.
Wow. That's perseverance too, though. Yeah. Wow.
Yes. Some people call it perseverance. Some people call it stubbornness, but whatever, got me there.
Yeah, exactly. And a similar question to the last one. Along the same lines, yeah. How many stories have you started and never finished the first draft?
Not a lot. By the time I sit down and start writing, I'm pretty deep into the thought process, and I'm kind of a finisher. I'm definitely a finisher. So I always have ideas swirling around in my head. But I guess I don't sit down to write them until they're concrete enough that I feel like I can carry forward. So probably not many, maybe half a dozen. And I wouldn't even say that they're not finished, because I may return to them sometime. I do have a chunk of a adult rom-com that I've started that I want to return to. So that's sort of looming over me. But ones that I've abandoned, not too many.
Right.
There are whole books that I've abandoned because I knew they were not publishable. But I guess sort of that persistence and stubbornness gets me to finish them. And then I realize I can't sell them.
Right. And are there any either novels you like, stories you've completed, or ones that you haven't completed that, you know, maybe the one you were just talking about, the rom-com, like the one that you're like, that one is a gem, or that one I know I want to return to and finish. Is it that rom-com, or is there another one?
It's probably that rom-com. And the reason I haven't finished it is because I just haven't had time. Mm-hmm. Because other stuff has come up, and it was a busy summer, and it's only about a year old. It's not even like it's, you know, very old. It's just a matter of, I had to put it down because an edit came my way, or I had to put it down because something else came my way. So it's not even abandoned. It's just sort of backburnered. Gotcha. I guess is my distinction. Yeah.
Yeah. Where do you find inspiration for your books, or is it not even about inspiration for you?
Ideas are everywhere. Small, Medium, at Large came to me. I woke up and the title was in my head, and I knew it was a good title. So there, like I said, Sorry for Your Loss was inspired by the funeral home. Everywhere. Ideas are everywhere. I think the key to being a writer is being open to them, and not dismissing even weird ideas or ridiculous ideas or things that don't make sense to you at the time. You know, you sort of catalog them in your head, and they come back. So ideas for stories are everywhere. Inspiration to write, you know, it keeps me from having to get a day job. So, you know, that keeps me going too, not having to get up and do a 9-to-5. So.
Right. That's a good inspiration for that.
Well, other than working for other authors, which I love. I mean, that it's, you know, I've built, I've cobbled together a few different careers that I love. So, you know, loving writing and loving having books out there and loving connecting with kids is a really big inspiration to keep me writing, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. What is one of the biggest challenges you've faced as a writer, specifically in terms of the craft itself?
In terms of the craft itself? Well, I've always been a pantser. I've never been much of an outliner, which comes back to bite me in the butt, because writing is so much easier when you do have an outline. Mm-hmm. So I've kind of forced myself to be an outliner. So I find that a bit of a challenge as far as the craft itself. Because a lot of times when I outline a book and then I start to write it, I get tired of it because I feel like I've already written it. So on a craft level, it's better that I outline, but on a satisfied writer level, I don't love it. So I'm, you know, trying to find that balance between discovering joy in the writing, while I'm outlining as well.
Right. Sounds like you and I are similar in that way. I remember years ago, I spent 3 or 4 months on this outline. I was very thorough. I had it all mapped out. All the chapters had a, you know, 1 or 2 pages of what's going to happen, and had it all ready to go. And then when I came to write that book, I had nothing left. It was like, the joy was gone or something. Cause it was just like, I started to write the book and this is not fun.
Yeah. And I could never do an outline that thorough. When I used to start a book, I would have three or four plot points, maybe the end, maybe not the end. And that's all I had. And I would sit down and start writing. And the joy in writing for me is the discovery of going, connecting those plot points. Now, if I'm going to outline, it's usually maybe a page or two total. I like to leave a lot of space in between for that joy and discovery. But I need to know where it's going. Otherwise, it meanders a lot and it takes a lot longer. And I'm getting to the point in my career where it makes more sense for me to be able to either write to a deadline or write quicker and just sort of expedite the process while still maintaining the joy in that process. So outlining just makes sense. But yeah. I'll never love it. Some people love it. I will never love it, I don't think. Yeah.
No, yeah. Sounds like you and I are similar. Because since that experience, I'm similar. I would do a little bit, but not a lot. Because yeah, I don't love it either.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk a bit about research. I know the question is, do you do any research? We know you do some research. How do you go about doing your research?
I don't love doing research. I did a lot of research for Sorry for Your Loss because I wanted to make sure I got all the technical details correct. And my dad actually was my beta reader. He actually read the book twice for fact checking. But generally speaking, I do not like doing research. To me, and I don't want to say it's a waste of time, it's time that I would rather spend writing than going down internet rabbit holes and things like that. That said, some things do require research. I always start with Google and finding good sources. For Sorry for Your Loss, I did go back to the funeral home and toured around and took a lot of pictures. But generally speaking, my research is pretty light. I write stories that are more about characters and personalities and tween angst more than facts and things that I need to get right, generally speaking.
Check out books written by local authors at the Huron County Library. Visit our website at Huron County Library to place a hold today.
Okay, does writing energize or exhaust you, or both?
Both. I mean, I love it, but it can be really exhausting, especially some fraught scenes, scenes that are difficult, are very emotional. When I'm writing for middle grade kids, there's so much emotion in a lot of the scenes. Sorry for Your Loss in particular, with all the trauma. I mean, it's still a book about friendships, but it's also a book about grief and trauma. And I mean, it was inspired partly because I'd lost my own mom. So it's a lot of times, even when I read parts of it to kids, you know, that the trauma of losing my own mom comes back. So it can be really exhausting. But it is energizing because you're creating worlds. I mean, you're playing your own god and you're having fun with characters and as an introvert at heart, it is so energizing to be on my own and in my own head and just creating worlds. And if somebody else wants to read about those worlds, well, I don't think it gets any better than that. But yeah, I mean, putting in the work can be exhausting for sure.
Yeah. 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 I feel the same way. It's both. It is definitely both.
Yeah.
Yeah. What other authors are you friends with and how have they helped you become a better writer?
Well, I work for a lot of authors and I know a lot of authors. So, I mean, I think the community at large, especially for Kidlit, so most of my friend authors are within the Kidlit world. So writing picture books, middle grade, YA, it's a really, really supportive community in Canada. Also, there's a couple organizations, Canscape and SCBWI, that are sort of networking hubs for a lot of authors. So I think that the biggest benefit of that, because writing is such a solitary career and you're sitting at home, and you're, one of the benefits of writing is you're sitting at home in your own head, but at the same time, you're sitting at home in your own head a lot. So being able to network with other writers, I find that really supportive, and it's really nice to be able to bounce things off of other writers and have beta readers. I've used a lot of writers as beta readers and traded manuscripts with them, so it goes both ways. And now that we're back to doing in-person bookstore events, going to other authors' events and having them come to mine. I mean, book friends are the best friends, I think, because they get it. And they're always very supportive. So I'm not going to name drop and say who all my favorite writer friends are. If you follow me on social media, you'll get an idea of who they are. But I can say that Kidlit writers are so supportive, and I don't think I'd be where I am, without the support of a community of great writers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually just did I'm doing the kind of social media posts leading up to launch, right? And one of my posts was, like, I titled it, "No Writer Can Be an Island." Because, yeah, it is. I've been part of two writers groups over the years, and they've been really supportive, and just the encouragement and the feedback. Oh yeah, you need that.
Yeah. Yeah. I truly believe that. I mean, the connections with other writers, has been invaluable. And even going to conferences and things like that. I mean, it's just being in a group of people like yourself who get the same things and feel the same things, and who get it when you say, "Oh, I just got another rejection," you know, and your family's like, "Oh, so move on to the next," but they don't get it, you know, or "I just signed a book deal," you know, it's different. It's a different kind of support for sure.
Yeah. If you could tell your younger writing self anything, what would you tell your younger writing self?
Don't be in such a rush to publish. I was very impatient to publish. And honestly, some of the books that I queried on, the early ones, I am so thankful they didn't get published, because they were not publishable. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of work to be a good writer. And I probably would have put as many books out as I had written without much thought to how I would think of them down the road. So I mean, would I have taken the advice? I don't know. But at the same time, it happens when it's meant to happen, because you're ready for it. So yeah, maybe just don't be in such a rush, but it will happen. Yeah. And you'll find a very satisfying career from it.
Right. Yeah. What was the best money you ever spent as a writer?
Oh, best money I ever spent as a writer. That's a hard call. I think that the bookmarks do well, and sending out the bookmarks is a good marketing tool. Conferences, even if there's no direct result of money coming back to me as a writer from going to conferences, it's that going back to that support issue and meeting other writers and feeling like part of a community is probably money well spent. Beyond that, I don't know, decent computer.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody I interviewed, that was their answer, my laptop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, probably. It makes sense. I don't think I could do it longhand, and yeah, right. Yeah, being able to sit outside with my laptop is a good thing.
Yeah, so there you go. Do you hide any secrets in your books that only a few people will find?
Probably not generally. I think there's one sort of mini Easter egg where kids play a video game, and I think across all my books that mention video games, it's always zombie slashers. Other than that, I don't think so. I don't think so, but I feel like I should.
Right. Well, you don't have to. Yeah.
No, but it's always fun. I always find it fun when I find other people's Easter eggs.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I inadvertently put an Easter egg in a book where I named a character a particular name, and a friend thought they were named after her, and they weren't. But right. Okay, you're welcome.
Yeah. And along the same lines, are your characters, are they ever drawn from, I mean, maybe consciously or subconsciously drawn from people you know or people in your life?
They always have a component of me. I can't write an authentic character without being able to get into their head. So I usually, what I do is I take a portion of me or a portion that I wish was me, and I put it into a character. So I can always recognize a little kernel of something to be able to sort of deepen the character. As far as wholesale, other people, I did once and I just felt gross about it. The person would never recognize themselves and it was never published anyway. I think I sort of create characters more that further the story and what I need them to do, and then sort of deepen them that way. But as far as using real people as like the basis for a character, other than myself, not really.
Okay.
Not consciously.
Right. Again, yeah. Might do it a bit subconsciously, but not consciously. Yeah. Yeah. Do you believe in writer's block?
I will not say whether I believe in it for other people. Your process is your process and that's your business. But for myself, if I feel like I'm stuck, it means I don't know where the story is going. I don't think I've ever been blocked for months at a time or anything like that. It's a matter of, I just don't know where I'm going. So usually I need to put it down and go do something else. If it's something else like walking the dog for an afternoon, or if it's turning to a different project for a week or maybe 2 weeks, my gears will turn in the background and it will come back. So for me, there really isn't such a thing as writer's block. The way I would call it is just being stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And it's never insurmountable. I mean, I've never not been able to get past it.
Right, which is good. And yeah. That word stuck reminded me that kind of in the editing process, you have beta readers. And do you ever find where maybe you were stuck on, I'm not sure where this scene should go, or I'm not sure how to flesh out the middle of the book or whatever, something, one of those elements. And then a beta reader comes back and they help you kind of, you know, okay, now I have an idea of how to fix that problem. Do you ever have that?
Well, at this stage of my career, I find that I need to finish a book before I send it to a beta reader. I need to have a full sense of it before I can start taking other people's feedback. Otherwise, it just gets muddled. Mm-hmm. In the middle of something, no, that doesn't happen anymore. Although I'm sure when I first started writing and I was in some writers groups where we traded chapters as we were going, I'm sure beta readers did help with that. But I do have an example of with Sorry for Your Loss, where I finished it and I had revised it a couple times. And actually that one I sent out to beta readers at several rounds after I had drafted it, because I just wanted to make sure I got it right. And at one point my agent said, it's missing something. I can't remember the exact feedback of what she thought it was missing. But it was a sort of a through line component that it just needed more, and she couldn't help me with suggestions. So I sent it to a beta reader and she came back with, I can't remember exactly what it was, but sort of almost even a throwaway line after the fact. And it just clicked. Everything clicked into place of what I needed to do. And it was just sort of that outside perspective that I couldn't see anymore. It was that forest for the trees thing. So absolutely, she helped me fix that book in a big way. And all it took was that one spark of, you know, maybe it's this or what if that. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was definitely something that was pivotal for that book.
Yeah, and it's kind of, I'm drawing off my own experience with my book that I'm about to publish, which I, like I said earlier, I worked on it for, I've been on 7 years now, and I didn't have anyone read it for about three. Like, I had done several drafts, you know, it's kind of like you, I wanted to get it finished first before somebody read it. And so Avery was the first person to read it. She read it. I think I had done five or six drafts, and I thought, oh, I'm pretty much done. She might find a couple little things. And she came back with several major things because she's read books before. She used to be a beta reader actually when she was younger. So she's got an eye for these things. And yeah, it was most of the things, if not all the things that she talked about or said they needed changing or fleshing out. I knew in the back of my mind, yeah, there's something not there, but I didn't know how to fix it, right? Like, I had to get that feedback from somebody else. And, you know, like, what if you did this, or what if you change this or add this, and getting that, like, I had no idea how to fix it. But once somebody told me, or we started talking about it, it's like, okay, now I started to see some solutions. So yeah, for me anyway, that really helped.
And that's the important thing about feedback too, is that it needs to resonate with you. So if somebody says something and it feels really off to you, and you sit with it and really, really consider it, and it still feels off, it's your choice not to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think as we go along in our writing and get more and more experienced, it's that sort of filter of what resonates and what really, you know, we know in the back of our head, like you said, it needs work. But sometimes beta readers can be completely off. But getting that outside feedback, and especially if, so say if one person says it, you can consider it and dismiss it. If two or three people say it, then you really need to sit with it and say, okay, something is really not working. Mm-hmm. But yeah, outside feedback is essential. I don't do as much sending out for beta readers other than that one book as I used to. But I also have the benefit of an editor, who is basically the ultimate beta reader, right? Mm-hmm. So, and an agent. So they do that as well. But yeah, outside feedback is absolutely essential.
Yeah. And you were talking about sitting with it, because I remember several times, like when she said something, this needs work. And my, of course, you probably had this too. Your initial reaction is, well, I don't think so. Like, I think it's pretty good already, right? I don't think it needs work. But then like a day or two goes by, and then you start thinking about it and sitting with it, and then it's like, oh yeah, no. And then certain ideas come, and it, like you say, it resonates, and then you know that is something that needs to be changed. And yeah, sometimes it just takes a few, at least for me, it took a few days to go, okay, now I can kind of see what she's talking about or referring to. Yeah, and I see a solution maybe.
And it's important to sort of get past the, I don't want to say arrogance, but the thinking that your writing is perfect. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes we get precious about our writing, or, you know, something resonates really well with us and other people are like, it's not so great. I always think I would so much rather a trusted first reader say, you need to fix this, then have it get published and kids drop the book saying, this is garbage, I can't believe, you know what I mean? Like, I'd rather find out before it's published that something isn't landing the way I intend it. So I always try to be super gracious about any feedback I get. And I'm like, it may be their opinion, but their opinion might be right. And better I find out now than down the road when there's nothing I can do about it, because that would be 1,000 times worse.
Yeah, no, exactly. Have you found Have you gotten better over time? A lot of people say that they've gotten better, you know, taking feedback the more it's happened. Have you found that too?
Oh yeah, for sure. Because the edges are worn off my arrogance of my, you know, when I first started writing and thinking everything was great and everything was perfect. And, you know, the longer you go along, the more you realize there's so much you don't know. And it's, you never perfect writing. You may perfect writing one particular book, but then the next book is completely different. And you also can't know everything there is to know about the world and what you're writing. And I think the edges have definitely worn off my arrogance as a writer. And I just want to put out the best books I can. And that requires other people. I can't do it 100% on my own. So definitely I've gotten better at taking it.
Yeah, I know. I'm still fairly new to it. So some of the first kind of feedback, I'm sure I'll get better as time goes on. Because, yeah, I was that kind of arrogance, like you say, like, well, it's already good enough, isn't it? Like, yeah.
Yeah. And you do get better, too, at learning what feedback to take and what not to take. You know, it's a lot of you with each book, I build confidence in my own skill as a writer and a self-editor, because that's a skill as well. So being able to recognize feedback as being constructive and right on the mark, or maybe not. I mean, I had somebody do some feedback once that was so far off the mark, like they just didn't get what I was trying to do with the book. And I'm like, I'm not even going to read the rest of this big, long feedback letter because they just don't get it. And they're trying to make me write a different book. And I'm confident in what I'm writing to know that that's not what I need right now. So, I mean, that comes with experience as well.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Huron County Author Talk with your host, Hamilton Baker. I hope you enjoyed my chat with Joanne as much as I did. If you'd like to purchase one of her books, you can find them all on her website, joannelevy.com. That's joannelevy.com. Some of her books are also available at the library. Visit huroncountylibrary.ca to place a hold today. Stay tuned for our next episode that we'll release in 2 weeks. The music on this program is Echo by Alan McKellis. Thanks for listening.